Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, it's Leave It In the Ring.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving Radio. It's Friday, 11 a.m. over here in Northern California. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got some things to catch up with. The recap of the Mayweather-Madonna, the moment as it was billed. And then, I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch that press conference between Chris the Nightmare Oriella versus Berman Stubern. I mean, that if anything, the first fight was really good. But this press conference really just boosted it up and made it just that much more anticipated. I've been waiting for this fight to happen. I've been wanting to see the rematch between these two. And I'm glad that this kind of kicked off the way it did. It kind of showed that, you know, Berman's those kind of guys that kind of stays quiet, doesn't say a whole lot. But what he had to say, it just made it that more entertaining and that more interesting to see now. How Chris the Nightmare comes out, is he going to come out angry? Does the game plan they originally had planned out, is it getting being thrown out? How about Berman? Is he too confident? Is there a major chance that he's thinking he's going to be able to knock out Oriella this time around? Because he had mentioned that the plan was to beat him and not knock him out. This everything that circles around, that's surrounding this fight right now, really honestly, has got me just pumped up. And I can't wait for this fight for Saturday night on ESPN. Gabriel, what about yourself? Did you have a chance to watch that press conference?
I did. I'm really excited about it. And actually, I got Stubern is the story that I'm writing tonight for MaxBoxing.com. I'm doing a piece on just all the fight in general. And I was kind of like, you know, he seems kind of mild-mannered. He seems like a hard worker. You know, it's like the story for Chris is always, is he in shape this time? Is he focused? You know, he's 33 years old at this point. And it's kind of amazing to think that Chris all of a sudden just turned 33. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like a little while ago it felt like he was just a contender or a prospect coming up. And he could be doing something, but, boy, he's got to get his weight under control and he's not that disciplined. And here we are at age 33 and we're still doing the same storyline. And I don't know if that's media's failing or if that's his failing. He's been in shape for the last few years. I mean, he fell off a little bit, I think, heading into that Stubern fight because he kind of sat on the shelf a long time. But to answer your question, I'm stoked by this fight. And with Stubern, it's like with his outburst and the way that press conference went, he sure gave us all something to write about and something to think about. I think we've trained ourselves to not care about the heavyweights. You know, we always just say, they're dead. And, you know, the Klitschkos have ruined it. You know, there's no good heavyweights anymore. But you really look at the heavyweight division, and it's actually much better than we give it credit for. And this fight is indicative of that, that when you remove the Klitschkos from the situation and you have two guys who are actual size, good things can happen. You know, the actual natural heavyweight size. These are big boys, but they're kind of more traditional. And I just think the punches are going to fly. The first fight was fought at a high pace. The difference, I think, was that Stubern, one, could handle Chris's power, but two, you know, Chris's nose was an issue, but the uppercuts and the more mid-range game and how comfortable Stubern is when he's on the inside. Chris is okay on the inside, but Stubern seems to like it there, that mid to short-range game. It's made for a great fight the first time. I can't see how it's not going to be a great fight the second time around.
You know, the thing that Chris, obviously the major mistake that I saw with that first fight was Chris was walking into those punches that, you know, Stubern really didn't have to go anywhere. He just had to throw a punch, and it was going to land because Chris walked directly into that punch. This time around, Chris has got to move that waist a little bit. You know, he's got to bob and weave the head. You know, I mean, you know, I go back and I watch, even like Tommy the Duke Morrison, who later on in his career showed that he didn't have the greatest chin. But if you watch him, he had movement. Even before he got knocked out with Ray Mercer, he was up on the scorecards because he had movement. You know, he was moving his waist, moving his head. He was throwing combinations. When he was in the inside, he was throwing to the body, and he's throwing uppercut. that's something that Chris has to really kind of, you know, bring out of himself, is head movement, move the waist, give different angles, and remember there's a body there too. Stavern is a big, thick guy, but too, you can kind of flatten out his power, punching power, and you can slow him down just a tad bit and get that jab to be a little lazy if you can invest. Just really invest into that body. You know, I don't know. It's a toss-up fight for me. I've been struggling on who I want to pick on this fight. I'm leaning towards Chris Oriella. I think that he has all the goods. Even from the beginning, I thought that this kid had it, the it factor to be a heavyweight champion. But if anybody's his worst enemy, it's himself. I mean, this guy, we've interviewed him numerous times, along with his trainer, Henry Ramirez. Been at Henry Ramirez's house sitting down on a one-on-one interview, and we've all said this, all simultaneously have said this, that Chris is very self-destructive. When things are going great, he finds a way just to kind of ruin it. I'm wondering if he's gotten out of that self-destruction that he's been in for the past couple of years in his boxing career. Not just in his boxing career, yeah, but in his whole life in general.
Well, I remember we did there was a conference call, and I forget which fight it was for. And I asked him about that. Do you have a fear of success? Do you feel like you're not worthy in this, you know? It was pretty funny because he was answering the questions and he was kind of getting into it. He said, man, I feel like I'm in a therapy session right now. But he was like, yeah, you know, he actually complimented the questions, though, because it was just kind of off the beaten path. But I think it cuts right to the heart of him, is that there's something about him. I mean, think back to the Adamic fight and the Klitschko fight. I mean, dude had the worst training camps ever. Just disappears, comes back fat, just didn't want to win. It wasn't that he doesn't want to fight. I don't think Chris has any problem fighting. I think he was afraid of, he actually said this, that, you know, if I left a percentage on the table, I'm paraphrasing, that he could say, well, I didn't give it my best, but there's a fear of, if I give all of myself to something and then I fail, well, what then? And I think Chris is kind of afraid of that, that he kind of leaves himself a back door, if you will, to say, well, I was this or that, or, you know, training camp. And for some reason, he's cooler living with that than the possibility of giving everything you've got and it not being enough, which is a scary thing, you know. This game is, you know, this sport, which is not a game, you cannot play it because you're getting somebody in front of you that's going to beat your ass if you're not on your game. It's the scariest thing in the world. And you get those questions. You've been in the ring. I've been in the ring when you're not quite all of yourself or whatever. It's getting hot in there and fight or flight kicks in. And you're like, what kind of guy am I? Am I the guy that shows up and hides? Am I Charlie Z? And I talk a lot of trash. And then when I get hit, I'm like, okay, I'm good. Or are you that guy that perseveres and pushes forward? I tend to think Chris is that guy that pushes forward. I mean, look at this Tavern fight. He never gave up. And yet he just doesn't give himself that chance. I think he's given himself that chance this time. Will it be enough? I don't know, but, man, I can't wait.
You know, I mean, there's no question he's got a lot of heart, and he could take a good punch. I got to give it up for Don King, because Don King, he could really stir it up himself. I mean, if he can make it a racial issue, he's definitely going to ride that coattail of making a racial issue. He was screaming in the background, black power. You know, it seemed like he wanted to make this into a black power versus brown power, whatever it is. It's honestly, it's caught everybody's ears. It's caught everybody's eyes. The weigh-in is today at 2 p.m., an hour after we're off the air. So I'm definitely going to be sitting down and watch the weigh-in just to see how both of these guys react. You know, I think I haven't been this excited really to see a heavyweight fight since David Haye and Vladimir Klitschko were going to go at it. But it ended up being a dud. With these two guys, we already know it's not going to be a dud. There's going to be some really serious fireworks. And I'm going to tell you what, and for it to be on ESPN, that is a great move, because there's going to be a lot of fans that have kind of, shunned heavyweight boxing and believe that heavyweight boxing is just kind of just swept away and drifted off, out into the abyss. They're going to find out that there are some really talented heavyweights out there that can give us some really good fights. We got a really good show coming up today. We're going to have a couple of guests come through, and we're going to do the recap of Mayweather and Madonna, talk about a little bit about Khan, his performance against Luis Collazo, and we're going to be giving up our prediction at the end of the show of who we think is going to win between Kristen Amariola, and Berman Stavern. We're going to have Felipe Leon, one of the hosts of Boxeo Tijuana Radio and the editor of San Diego Fights. Rich Morata, who's a commentator. You've seen him like USA. He's been on pay-per-view. He's a great color analysis. Rich Caninos, who's a commentator as well for Go Fight Live. And then fighter Ray Beltran. He's going to be coming through. He wants to clear some rumors, something that was put out there about his change of, and I'm not going to say management, but he has left his manager, Stephen Fader. So he wants to clear that up, and he wants to also clear up because I guess some fans were kind of upset that he didn't take the Baby Bull fight, that he passed on it. But there's a big reason why he said he passed on it. So he's going to be coming on, leaving the ring about 12:30 and give his explanation and fill us in on what's going on with his career. You know what? I guess we should just give our take really quick before we get the rest of the guys on there, on here about Mayweather and Madonna. Certainly, listen, I've been going back and forth, man, with a lot of Mayweather fans. And I got to tell you this. I cannot sit here and believe that Floyd decided to do something he normally never does, which is lay on the ropes, take a lot of shots, block them, try to slip them, and try to bang back and try to get somebody out of there. And then after nine rounds, decide, you know what? I'm going to box him. Now I'm going to try to school him. I don't buy that. What I would buy is if Floyd came out clean and said, you know what? I underestimated him, didn't think much of this fighter, and I thought this was going to be an easy fight. Because that's really basically what happened when he got in there with Miguel Cotto. I think he kind of believed that Miguel Cotto was shot. He was going to be shell-shocked when he got in the ring with Floyd, that he was going to be able to have one of his better performances against the so-called pound-for-pound TBE. And guess what happened? It ended up being a much better fight than a lot of us anticipated. Here goes along with Madonna, a much far better fight. I mean, we all were really bagging on the fight. We didn't think it was going to be a great, great fight between those two. We thought it was going to be a one-sided deal, and guess what? We ended up getting something a little more extra special, something that we normally don't see out of a Floyd Mayweather fight. Now, that being said, people that are saying that this was Floyd's plan to be entertaining, I'm sorry. You know, your guys are kind of undermining what Madonna did. He went out there, and he put on a show. He did exactly what he does in every other single fight, okay? He goes out there, puts a lot of pressure, and throws a lot of bombs. That's exactly what he did, and he was getting through. Those early rounds, he was doing his job. It came down to the late rounds, and it comes down to those championship rounds. He gassed out. He wasn't able to keep the pace up, and we saw exactly what happened. Floyd Mayweather was able to pick him and start doing what he normally does, which is box. Now, does he deserve a rematch? Absolutely, and I'm going to tell you why. Because now people are saying, well, we see a rematch for what? It's going to be a shutout. Wait a minute, folks. You can't have it like that. You can't have it both ways because that's what we were saying in the first time around. The first fight that was – the first time there was – said and called that this fight was going to happen, we all said the same thing. We all said this is going to be a shutout fight. Now we're saying it again. Come on. This is why fights are made. Give him his due. I think he earns the respect, and I think he earns the right to get that immediate rematch with Floyd Mayweather. Gabriel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't buy the whole idea that Floyd just was like, you know, I'm going to sit on the ropes. I'm going to let this guy hit me everywhere, every which way. And at some point, I'll just take over, and it'll be fine. That's just, like, goes against the idea of fighting. I mean, I guess you could, you know, you can wait in there and see how a guy is and what he's got. But in that scenario, wouldn't Floyd be on his toes, kind of letting him, you know, bull rush and then turning to the side and moving? All right, this is what he's going to bring. Maybe I'll go to the ropes once, see what he's going to bring over there. Okay, because I am the all-time greatest and – obviously something of a superhero in people's minds. You know, now I'm just going to take over, and that's, you know, and then Madonna has no chance. That's not the fight we saw. We saw a guy that looks like he can get knocked off the blocks a little bit. Floyd, I mean, his legs didn't look strong. There were times when his punches looked downright slow, and maybe he was just kind of throwing them I don't know what, but, you know, he was out of position, and so he didn't get quite the zip on him. But we talked about this. There was a couple right hands that just looked like, wow. Like, I could totally see that coming. And that's rare from Floyd. You know, at 37, he's 37. You know, and it's we got to accept that. And at 37, you don't know what you're going to get each time. When you fight two times a year, it's a bit of Russian roulette. Because in boxing, you know, in basketball, if I have an off night, maybe tomorrow night I'll feel better. But in boxing, you know, you're peaking towards one moment. I didn't see the best fighter in the world currently at this moment. What I saw was a guy that has been the best fighter in the world for years and years, used all that experience to win the fight, but that struggled with the guy that we all expected him not to. The style that's quote-unquote tailor-made for him. You know, all those things. I mean, coming into the fight, I was picking against Maidana so widely because I thought so little of Adrian Broner. You know, I'm like, what was he at welterweight? What is Maidana really? And so it makes you question where Floyd is at right now, really. You know, Maidana, this game is an interesting game in boxing because guys can peak. You know, a guy like Maidana, like Floyd will always say about Pacquiao, how can a guy be ordinary his whole life and then suddenly extraordinary? That's kind of this game a little bit sometimes. You get some experience, get some fights under your belt, you get some guys at the right time. Timing is everything in this sport. And suddenly two guys that maybe weren't in the same league look like they are. And that's, I think, a little bit of this. And the reason I want to see the rematch, you know, in that sense, I want to give credit to Floyd. I gave him the fight, 6-5-1 even. Could have been 7-5. I didn't quite have Maidana
winning.
Yeah, I had
a 7-5.
I don't see people – I wouldn't argue with it. You know, it was one of those fights. You know, what do you like? I just thought Floyd was more pinpoint when he was winning. Clearly winning. And he kind of took control after the 6. But to me, why I want to see the rematch is that what if this is – Floyd's Roy Jones Jr. versus Antonio Tarver one moment where you go, well, he just came down from welterweight, maybe the weight affected him. People kind of make all these different excuses, but the fact of the matter is the guy is old and he's starting to fade, and there's always a guy out there that's willing to push you and able to push you off the cliff, and Maidana might be that guy. This is not that style that you really want at this age. You know, when Floyd was a younger man, yeah, he could get up on his toes and box. I think it's like Castillo the way he did. But at this age, I mean, I don't know about you, but the legs just don't look good anymore. Maybe he was injured. I don't know. But he just looked a little stationary.
You know, the thing that surprised me the most is this, is that Maidana's, his feet are not very fast, okay? You could practically do, you know, 1-1000, 2-1000 before he even gets to you. And that's what was telling about what Floyd. Because when he was trying to get away from him, you could see that Floyd's legs weren't as quick as it was almost like it took him 9 rounds to warm up, to figure it out, to kind of wake up, in my opinion. You know, he was leaning on those ropes. He was trying to go for that knockout, and it wasn't because he was trying to give it to the fans. What it was he was trying to do was trying to get Maidana off of him. You know, he was trying to land something big where it gave him some room, gave him some space so that he can do what he normally does, which is tee off of you. And Maidana didn't give him that. He didn't allow it to happen. He was right in his chest, and, you know, he was going to the body. He was going back to the head. Now, when folks talk about dirty tactics, you know what? We all knew that. We all knew that that Maidana had to make it dirty in order for him to get anywhere with Floyd. In order for him to create openings, you got to get a little dirty. But here's the thing is, Floyd is dirty himself. He's gotten away with a lot of things that he shouldn't have been able to by the refs and by the fans themselves. So, to me, what I was witnessing was a guy that was literally struggling with a fighter that really didn't care that he was Floyd Mayweather. He just threw that out the door. And we've said this numerous times. You don't try to box a boxer. A brawler is supposed to brawl a boxer, and a boxer is supposed to box a brawler. And you saw it was evident that Floyd was trying to brawl with them, and that just wasn't his game plan. And I'm sorry. He wasn't trying to do that for entertainment. He was puzzled, and he looked puzzled. And as soon as his eye got busted up and he started bleeding, you saw the panic in his face. And that made him even have to think a little bit more, you know. And I've said this numerous times. If you've listened to us on the show, I've always said the way to beat a boxer is not allow him to think. And Maidana was doing that for 4 to 5, you know, what was it, 5 to 6 rounds. He was doing it. But man, the pace that he had to be on was a lot. I mean, I don't know there's not a lot of athletes out there that can sustain that type of pace. And he was doing it. He's doing it fairly well. But you could see little by little, it was deteriorating. It was just, you know, getting away from him. And then you started to see the sharpness from Floyd. He, you know, you talk about a veteran. He stayed calm. Even after that cut, he was able to gather himself up again, and he was able to start looking and try to pinpoint. Now, the good thing for Floyd is that he pays good money for a good cut, man. Because, you know, Marcos Pinedon, he needed a good cut, man. He didn't have a cut, man. You know, and Love,
oh, dude,
to me,
yeah,
got off the hook.
Wow.
You know, Parabon. Yeah, Parabon. Parabon.
I think there's a clip of that, of him tripping out under, you know, panic in the dictionary. I mean, whoa.
He almost you know what? It was like it was the first time he ever saw blood. Not just his blood, but blood itself. I mean, he started panicking. He didn't know what to do, you know. But the sad part about it is that his corner didn't know what to do. You know, and I was talking to Mike Rodriguez, well, you know, good friend of the show, was a cut man for War Tape and a lot of fighters out there. And he said, that's why you need a good corner man. That's why a fighter should invest in getting a good corner man, or a team should get a good corner man, because of those type of moments. And I completely agree with that, because you know what? If he had a good corner man that would have able to have stopped and really help him out and get, you know, for his vision, I think it would have been a completely different outcome. You know, and Love is, to me, Love got lucky. I know it's, you know, I know we said there was no such thing as luck in the fight game, but you got to say that Love got a little luckier. He was getting rocked and he was getting beat. You know, Pinedon went out there and he was just laying it down on him. He didn't care that he was part of the money team. He was there because his goal was to be the first super middleweight Mexican champion in that division. But it all slipped away because of the cut, and he panicked. And like I said, he looked like it was the first time him, you know, seeing blood, and that slipped out of his hands. You know, so
Give this to Love, though. Love got hurt, but man, he took it. You know, he fought through that adversity, and
oh, he did.
But boy, I mean, he got hit so many times on the ropes and in the corner. Like, you know, it being part of the money team, I expected that little like coin change sound on Mario when you find like a, you know, a box that's got a bunch of gold coins in it. It was like ding, 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 ding. I mean, he just got lit up. But you got to give him credit. People can say the guy's got a bad chin, he gets rocked or hurt, but he handled it.
You know what? I'm not defending Love at all, but this is what I got to say. I honestly believe that same thing with Floyd. They underestimated their opponent. And I don't think Love really realized how big of a Mexican that kid was. Because Marcos came in, dude, and he was – you could see the size difference in width and in length. He was a big, big guy. Hey, we got our next – we have our first guest with us here on Leaving the Ring right now, Felipe Leon from San Diego Fights and from Boxeo Tijuana Radio. What's up, brother? You there?
Hey, David, Gabe, how you guys doing?
How you doing, man?
Good.
Happy Friday.
Thank you. Happy birthday. That was like a month ago.
Thank you, man. Thank you for reminding me how old I am. I appreciate it.
Hey, his was a month ago. Mine was Monday, dude. What's up with that?
Oh. Well, happy birthday to you too.
Hey, Felipe, so let's run this down. How did you score the Mayweather-Madonna fight? And did Floyd Mayweather look old to you? And do you think that Madonna did enough to deserve a rematch?
Well, I did score it 116-112 for Floyd Mayweather. I thought that in the second half of the fight, he pretty much took control of the situation and began landing the harder and cleaner punches. And that's one of the points that I did want to bring, and I had discussed with other people in our show too on Boxeo Tijuana, is that for the first time in a while, we did see Floyd look a little bit all of his 37 years that he's been on this planet. You could kind of tell that he wasn't as in the first half at least, as confident as he has been before. You know, but one thing that I did notice as far as my take on it is that we never really seen, I don't know if he's a great actor or he's that great of a fighter, but we've never seen them fight at 100%. I always feel like that he could do a little bit more. And I don't know if it's because he's that great of an actor or he's that great of a fighter. I felt that at times when he was against the ropes,
yeah,
he could have gotten out of there quicker and not taking some of the punishment that he did, but I can't tell or I couldn't tell if he was there because Marcos Maidana wanted him there or because he actually wanted to be there and mix it up. And that's the part that I still can't get from Mayweather, that I can't tell whether he's really fighting to the limit, you know, to his most, to the best that he can, or he's letting something, he's letting things happen just to see what's going to happen next.
So let me ask you this. You think that some of us are jumping the gun by believing that his legs look a little old, or being at 37, Father Time may be catching up to him a little bit here?
No, not at all. I think that we're right on point in saying that. You guys are right on point in saying that. I mean, look at all these other fighters that are fighting well beyond their into their late 30s and early 40s. I mean, Bernard Hopkins is not the fighter that he was 15, 20 years ago, even 5 years ago. Shane Mosley wasn't the same fighter that he was 5, 10 years ago. And obviously in June, we're going to see Sergio Martinez and see a guy that uses his legs a lot, more than any of the other fighters that we mentioned or I mentioned, except for Floyd, see how his legs hold up, especially after those surgeries.
So let me ask you this. You think
he uses his legs even more than Floyd. I mean, his whole game is based on that crazy footwork and getting into a rhythm. And you can see, especially with him, as he's slowed down. I was noticing this with Floyd, too, as he's slowed down. Roy Jones, I guess, is similar. You start to actually see the patterns, and they're doing kind of the same physical things, but it's just a little bit slower, and you see almost the simplicity of it, particularly with Martinez, that his attack, you know, he does that shoulder shrug, which actually kind of moves his arms forward, and it leaves his hands in position to come straight up, and he's just trying to, like, lure you in, but that's kind of turned into his game as a guy, like, circling you and not darting in and out as much because he doesn't have that burst because I think his knee's jacked. I'm really curious about that fight. But back to this one, I think, look at what Hopkins was, 37 when he beat Trinidad. Compare that 37 to the 37 we're seeing. Floyd just doesn't seem like he's able to just take over physically, be in the center of the ring, and dominate the way, you know, he did it in spurts. But I don't know. To me, did you guys get a sense that there was an injury or something wrong to the point where he couldn't just stand and move the way he did in the Canelo fight?
I don't think there was an injury, and if there was, he would have obviously made it a big point in the post-fight presser to say that he was injured, you know, to offset some of the talk that was being said about him, you know, not looking the way that he's looked in the past. As far as the whole Trinidad and Bernard Hopkins comparison, I think that even though Marcos Maidana is coming up also from super lightweight or junior welterweight, and Floyd is also, they're just two different types of body. You know, I think that Floyd Mayweather is just a smaller guy, and he's not going to be able to overpower anybody at welterweight, you know. I think the guys that he has faced at welterweight have really, you know, put on the weight, whether it would be the right way or the wrong way, but they put on the weight, and they still look a lot, you know, physically bigger than Floyd Mayweather. So I don't think that he's in the ring trying to overpower anybody, but, you know, use what he's always used, which is his boxing ability to outbox him.
Let's go on to Amir Khan, man. His performance against Luis Collazo, was it good enough, in your opinion, to get Floyd Mayweather next?
No, not at all. I don't think that it was good enough. I mean, it was good enough to beat Luis Collazo, but, I mean, let's remember, guys, Luis Collazo was only there because he was able to knock out Victor Ortiz. You know, Luis Collazo is not a guy that has a lot of power, and really, he was pretty much forgotten, you know, as far as I was concerned, in the elite level of the division and in boxing. And the only reason that he got that shot and made it somewhat exciting on paper was the fact that he did knock out Victor Ortiz in a big type of profile fight. It wasn't on Showtime or HBO, but it was on the eve of the Super Bowl, and a lot of people, you know, it was a big buzz, and the way he knocked him out, which was pretty impressive, you know, or you know, it looked good on TV. I think, in my opinion, that was the only reason that he was in the ring with Amir Khan last Saturday. So, to me, Amir Khan, I mean, to me, that performance wasn't all that great. I wasn't all that impressed. I mean, he did win, and he did win in a good enough fashion, but I wasn't all that impressed. I wouldn't want to see him against Floyd Mayweather. I would rather see the rematch with Maidana. And to answer your first question, I think that Maidana did do enough. Because if anything, it's been one of the most entertaining Floyd Mayweather fights we've had in quite some time. So if it's the choice between Marcos Maidana or Amir Khan, I'd rather see Maidana, even though we all know that Amir Khan can't do it in September because of Ramadan.
Well, there you go. Felipe Leon here from Boxeo Tijuana Radio. Every Tuesday night, you can catch it on the Leave the Ring mobile app, and you can also go down to the website and read the articles in Spanish, and also be sure to check out SanDiegoFights.com. He's the editor and the owner of that website as well. Felipe, thanks for calling in, brother. I really appreciate your opinion and your take on the fight.
Hey, thank you guys, and I hope to see you guys ringside sometime soon.
Are you going to Cotto Martinez?
No, I'm actually looking. I'm not going to go to that. I'm Mexican. I'm Mexican in the middle of 15,000 Puerto Ricans, Argentinians. Were you crazy? But
it's going to be interesting for me. I'm going. It's going to be very interesting.
Make sure you work on your Argentinian or Mexican accent.
I'll wear bright lime green skinny jeans and an orange really tight jacket, and I'll just fit right in.
Yeah, but you know what I am looking forward and where I am going to be at this Saturday night is that Chris Arroyo Bermain Stavern fight. You know, I think it's going to be a great fight.
Good.
I think, I want to be there. I think that Arroyo has every chance to win. I mean, it's going to be a tough fight. He has to probably put on the best fight of his career, but I think he can do it, and I want to be there when history is made, when the first Mexican-American heavyweight champion is crowned. So I'm looking forward to Saturday night.
Is that your pick?
What's that?
As a Mexican-American, are you picking Arreola? Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, I'm going to pick Arreola. I was in the gym with him a couple weeks ago. I saw him spar. I'm going to be honest. I wasn't all that impressed with the sparring, but, we all know, we don't know exactly what they're working on. I wasn't in the corners listening to Henry and finding out what he was actually instructing him to do, but I did see Joe Hanks put a little bit of hands on him. But he looks in great shape. He looks very motivated. I had the chance to interview him for Fight News, and he looks very motivated. He sounds very motivated. He's in great shape. I think the fact that he's been out of Riverside for the last two camps have really helped him out. And he seems very mature. I've had the chance to interview him before, and this time he's still cussing and he's still talking the way he usually talks. But he seems like he knows that if he doesn't win this fight, and he doesn't look in shape in the later rounds, then his days as an elite heavyweight contender or fighter are pretty much over. So I think that he knows that, and he's going to go in there, and I think he's going to lay it all on the line. Leave it in the ring, per se.
Yeah, there you go.
Let me ask you this, just one last question. Because we talked about this is history. If he wins, he's the first Mexican to ever win the heavyweight title. But it's a box-off, Do we count this one, or do we just kind of say, everybody else has probably had one of these kind of champions anyways, so can we count it, or does he need to fight and beat a Klitschko in order to really be the guy and really have it count?
Well, I mean,
that's a good question. That's actually a good question.
That is a great question, but the thing is we are going to count it. We're going to count it because at the end of the day, he's going to walk out of that ring with that green and gold belt, and the fact that it's a vacant title, it does make a lot of, it makes us, the hardcore boxing fans, say, well, he didn't beat the linear champion. He has to go out there and fight a Klitschko. But for the casual fan or for, the majority of Mexican fans that, are going to be very proud that this guy speaks Spanish, that he looks Mexican, not to say that other Mexicans don't look Mexican, but he looks Mexican,
I
think it's going to be a big
Chris
point.
Or have a cousin that looks like Chris,
I mean, shit.
He's totally
like
my cousin Vince,
it's
hilarious. And so, he's kind of one of our own. I get exactly what you mean.
And for us hardcore boxing fans, then for us to really call him, a champion, whether he's Mexican or Chinese or Japanese or American, he has to beat a Klitschko. And hopefully he wants it. He told me in the interview that I conducted with him a couple weeks ago, which I found very interesting, but I didn't include it in my actual piece, was that he's not willing to go to Europe and fight Vladimir Klitschko over there. He feels that if Klitschko wants to be a world champ and he wants to get worldwide attention, he needs to come to the United States. And he made it a point that, hey, I'm fighting ESPN, and I don't see it as a step down from HBO and Showtime, because ESPN is in more cables. It's in more markets. You know, you're going to go into a bar or a wing shop or whatever the case
right.
may be, and ESPN is going to be on, and they're going to be watching my fight because it's on ESPN. So if he wants to be a world champ and wants to get – I don't think that Klitschko needs any more attention, but if he wants to get the worldwide attention, as Chris Cerullo put it, he needs to come fight in the United States. I'll do it in New York. I'll do it in Las Vegas, but I'm not going to Europe. And I think he had a great point with that, you know, but obviously, you know, Klitschko fills up, you know, 50, 60, 70,000 stadiums, so.
Well, I think
yeah,
the reason
be an argument.
Been over there is because they don't need us. And I think
exactly.
what Chris is essentially saying is, dude, I'm going to be a Mexican heavyweight champion in Southern California or just
yeah.
the United States. I don't need you guys either. The money's in the defenses. He can just rack up, you know, wins and money. And probably down the line, if they're smart, think like Dodger Stadium. Let's say, I mean, just perfect scenario. He wins. They do another fight. Chris has a couple of defenses that he can win. I mean, you build towards something. I mean, that could be huge because Chris.
Just imagine
you know,
this.
Great personality.
You know, he wins. He beats Deontay Wilder, which would be – and now in everybody's eyes, he's like, okay, he's looking really good because he just beat a guy that's 31-0 or 32 if you count that knockout he just scored over that little white guy on TMZ.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, and now he fights Klitschko at Dodger Stadium. I mean, I try not to go to Dodger Stadium because I'm from San Diego. I'm a Padres fan, but I will go up to Dodger Stadium and watch that fight.
Yeah, no, or Staples Center, Wilder Areola at Staples or the Forum. You know,
oh, yeah.
SoCal's kind of coming back to life. Like right when I leave, like they start moving up, opening up all this stuff. But
maybe that's what it did.
You didn't get the memo?
You were finally out of the county.
I was going to say, you didn't get the memo, Gabe? You didn't get the memo?
Coast is clear.
Yeah, coast is clear. All right, Felipe.
Everyone
hey, man.
Up.
Thanks for being on, brother. Really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much,
and don't drink and drive because you'll spill your beer. Ah, I stole your line. Now you can't say it at the end of the show.
I know, man.
All right, talk to you guys later.
All right, man.
Typical Mexican. Steals my line.
Now we're going to get sanctioned by the WBC. Great.
There we go, man. And to answer your question, too, do we accept this if a Mexican-American wins the heavyweight? Dude, if we accept Cinco de Mayo as a holiday, why wouldn't we not accept Chris the Nightmare Oriola as the Mexican heavyweight champion of the world? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, seriously. You know, yeah, John Ruiz, he wore that Huggy Bear outfit. You know, yeah, Chris can – you go on. He's going to be the, you know, at least the very first Mexican to hold the heavyweight title. Don't necessarily have to recognize him as the champ, but you got to give it to him if he picks up that title that he's the guy. It's going to be interesting because it's that thing. I mean, he becomes like a Felix Sturm or, you know, any of these guys that pick up a belt and it becomes a business. Tito Trinidad was a business, you know, out of Puerto Rico. He had the IBF belt for 7.5 years, 15 title defenses. And they finally cashed out with, you know, the welterweight division against De La Hoya for like $15 million, $14 million. That's how you do this. That's how this game is played. Chris hopes to get into that. And you got to think about it. I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to give Stavern a rematch if he pulls it off. But, you know, there's a fight right there that you know, right off the bat that's going to have interest, you know, that down the line you can build back towards. I'm really excited, man. It's the first time in a while I've been excited for a heavyweight fight. But I'm picking Stavern myself. I got Stavern by a decision, personally.
I'm on the fence on it, to tell you the truth. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't know who's going to pull it off. I mean, both guys bring a lot to the table. You know, and Stavern...
Stavern's a little sharper, a little more accurate.
Yeah, and that's like I said. And then I said, you know, like I said, you know, if Chris didn't iron out the kinks that he brought the first time around, we're going to see this. We're going to end up witnessing the same thing we saw the first time. You know, he's got to do something a little bit different. He's got to be a little bit more mobile. He's got to show angles. And, you know, just volume and having a good chin and a lot of heart, it's not going to win this fight. There's got to be some ring smarts coming into this rematch here. So hopefully they watched the first tape and they studied it and they learned from their mistakes. But, you know, Chris was walking in with no jab. He wasn't setting anything up. He was really relying on being just a whirlwind. And guess what? He ended up getting dropped. He ended up getting his nose broken because he had no defense. His head was stationary. His head was right there to be hit. And he walked into every single punch that, you know, Stavern threw. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to be calling in Rich Murata right now here on Leaving the Ring Radio. We're going to talk some boxing with him. And then a little later, we're going to have another Rich come on from Go Fight Live commentator as well. Talk about the moment here on Leaving the Ring Leaving the Ring Radio. You want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to try to patch in some calls, some callers as well. If we can squeeze it in, it's just, you know, we're fighting time right now. And we're, you know, bringing a lot of folks onto the show really quick just to get their take. And we're going to keep it rolling. Let me ask you, what'd you think about that Dante Wilder thing on TMZ?
It's one of his better fights. Just hearing the whole, reading the story, you know, the Charlie Z, it's one of these, you know, we all know who he is if you're a hardcore boxing fan. He's just kind of this internet troll guy who thinks he's, like, the greatest boxer ever, like, the greatest that never was kind of a thing. He seems to challenge a lot of people. He's been in with, like, Roger Mayweather. I remember that there was a guy that worked at Fortune Gym, who probably no one here knows, but that he beat his ass. Like, you know, him and Charlie were going at it, you know, on the phone or, I don't know, online. And finally, he showed up to the parking lot, and Charlie has the ability to make you so angry that you see red and you lose all sense of reason. He just went out there and, like, just knocked him out, you know, knocked him to the pavement before really the fight had officially begun. He just got it done. Charlie is this guy that's kind of a weird personality, like a fringe person in boxing, and I guess he said some really terrible things about Deontay's daughter. Who was born with a severe medical condition called spinal bifida, and just said a lot of things about him. It was, like, relentless. It was kind of like the Curtis Woodhouse case out of the UK. But apparently, they decided to meet up, and
you know,
he's got some real passion, some real heat, man.
Right. The Charlie Z guy's been around. I've known about him. Actually, I've seen him, interacted with him about 8 years ago, and
I ran into him on Sunset Boulevard one time.
Right.
Freaky guy.
Let me patch in our next guest here on Leaving Ring Radio. We got Rich Murata, who's a commentator, one of the best out there. Used to listen to him on the USA Network. As a matter of fact, I was listening to him just last night when he was commentating a couple of fights. And he's one of the, I would have to say, one of the best in the game out there when it comes to commentary. Rich, are you there?
Hey, yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate the compliment, too.
Hey, thank you. Thank
How you doing,
you
Rich?
Very much.
Happy Friday,
Gabriel,
Rich.
I'm doing just fantastic.
Yeah,
okay,
it's a perfect day. Things are going well for the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame as well, right?
Yeah, actually, we're having fun with that. We're just the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, which we got started a year ago, and we're planning right now our August induction ceremony and dinner. We just had a party, what we call Party with the Legends, at the Tropicana Hotel a few weeks ago, where there were a lot of boxing luminaries who showed up to it, and a lot of fans showed up, and it was a great chance to, you know, mix the fans with the boxing community and the fighters and people they've heard about and read about and seen and admired through the years. It was really quite a wonderful night over there with our party. We had Evander Holyfield, who's one of our inductees. He was there, and Floyd Mayweather Jr., Sugar Shane Mosley, Zab Judah, Cornelius Boza Edwards, who's another one of our inductees for this year. He was in attendance. Our two referees who are going into the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, Richard Steele and Kenny Bayless, Miguel Diaz, a very famous Vegas figure as a trainer and cut man and everything else possible. And so it was just really, we really had a nice night, and we were pleased that some of these people who really have had no connection to the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame came over and said hi as well, like Ruslan Provodnikov And so it was very cool. Some of the best female fighters out there, Anna Houlton and Ava Knight, were in attendance. So that was really great. And all that's kind of a prelude to what we're doing in August, which is our second annual induction dinner and ceremony that we will have. In fact, we're going to probably put the tickets on sale early next week with that. In fact, in the next day or two, we'll make the official announcement of date, time, site, et cetera.
It sounds like we got to make our way down over there, Gabriel.
Yes,
please.
Without question. Since I'm released from my contract to this show, I should be able to travel once again. It's been kind of not a lost year, but I've been doing this show like nonstop. I think we end in late June, so then I'll be free to attend events.
There you go.
So the moment is a big thing now, right now out there. Everybody's there's a tug of war of who won and who should have won. So let me ask you, Rich, how did you score the Mayweather-Madonna fight?
Well, I was there ringside, and I scored the fight 115 to 113 for Mayweather, 7-5. But I must admit, one of the rounds that I did give to Marcos was the last round. So basically, going into that last round, I had Mayweather ahead 7-4, and basically at that point, I felt that Maidana needed a knockout to win. I can tell you exactly what rounds I scored for Maidana, which were the rounds 1, 3, 5, 8, and 12. And other than that, I felt it was Mayweather's night in a very exciting fight, and a very, very good fight, maybe unexpectedly exciting, although I did expect an exciting fight going in because I knew what Maidana was going to bring to the table, and he was going to force Floyd to fight, and he did.
Myself and Gable, we weren't really expecting something like this to happen, and it did. But, you know, while us analyzing the fight and watching the fight numerous times, we both kind of noticed something, and we're wondering if you noticed this. Do you think that Mayweather's legs looked a little old on that Saturday night, or no?
Not really, you know. I mean, I think the year that in the last few years that Floyd has not been in any way a real gigantic mover and boxer or runner, as some like to classify him incorrectly, by the way. But that, you know, in a lot of these fights, he has stood in the pocket with these guys, and he makes them miss in close. Now, in this fight, it wasn't really a case of choosing to stand in the pocket. I mean, Maidana was just all over him. And then that first round was unforgettable, the way that he came out, which was even more than I thought. I thought Floyd's legs were okay. If he had attempted to box more, I think he probably would have been able to do it. I think the second half of the fight, he still seemed very strong to me. And, in fact, I had gave him most of the rounds in the second half of the fight outside of rounds 8 and 12. So I thought he did well. I think, you know, if there's any declining there, it's minimal, you know, on Mayweather's part. But he certainly did get hurt, he got hit, and he got bruised up a little. But remember, Miguel Cotto did the same thing, you know, a couple of years ago. He also hit Floyd, won a few rounds along the way, and bruised him up a little as well. So, you know, it's a different Floyd, maybe not quite as dominant, but I still think very, very brilliant and still, in my opinion, far and away the best right now.
You know, Floyd, immediately after that in his press conference, he had stated, even before that, he had stated that his plan was to, for the sake of entertainment, was to stay on the ropes and trade with Maidana. Do you buy into that, or do you think that this was the more of credit to Maidana being in front of him in his chest?
Well, I bought into it to this extent. I predicted Mayweather to win by knockout in that fight. I thought he was going to engage with him, and I thought that would be Maidana's undoing. And the reason I expected an exciting fight, and I felt this going in, was that I felt that Maidana was going to bring it hard, not the way that Robert Guerrero and Canelo Alvarez chose to fight him, which was very disappointing to me personally, because those two guys are, you know, they know how to bring it, and they can be sluggers, and I've felt that's the way to, you know, to fight Floyd Mayweather. But, you know, it seemed to me these guys get in there and forget a game plan, or at least a logical game plan, and think that they're going to outbox Floyd Mayweather. You know, that never entered Marcos Maidana's mind. And I never felt that it would. So I expected him to fight and slug and you know, bring the fight to Floyd, which I felt that once they began exchanging and engaging with each other, that that would prove to be his undoing. You know, my Don has been dropped on numerous occasions by a lot of guys.
Right.
And so I thought that Floyd, once he began landing his, you know, straight punches and his very sharp, crisp punches, would be able to knock him down and maybe to finish him. In fact, my pre-fight prediction had been a knockout for Mayweather in that fight. So I was expecting that, yes.
Yeah, I expected almost a Gotti-like performance. I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if Floyd is able to just kind of dance around him and pot shot him. But it was a much different thing. I don't know. I think the legs, there was a certain amount of, you know what, I actually can't change the course of this. I'm going to ride it out, let the guy get a little tired, work in those body shots. Floyd was, his body shots, whatever he threw, he was very committed to. I think that's really what won it for him. Because in the back end of the fight, it was like Maidana ran out of the energy to do anything different. He could kind of keep ramming into Floyd and closing the gap, but he could do less and less about, you know, when he was there. I'm all for a rematch. I think it's the most logical fight. It was a fun first fight. Why not see it again?
Yeah, I think a rematch would certainly be fine. I mean, I would see no reason why not. It was a close fight. I don't feel it was a controversial decision, although Maidana tried to paint it that way. I find it very difficult to find anybody that actually scored it for Maidana. Everybody that I've talked to seemed to have it very close, but you know, for Floyd, even you know, in the range of 7-5 or 8-4 for Floyd Mayweather in the fight, but it was close enough. And it was certainly exciting enough to warrant a rematch, if that's the direction that you know, that he wanted to go. I love watching Maidana fight. I tell you, every fight of his, I mean, I never know what to expect, other than that it's going to be really exciting. And so I really like watching him fight. So I would have no problem with that if they get it on together again.
That's so true too. I mean, he you never know if he's going to take a punch well. You never know if he's going to get back up and knock down the other guy. And, you know, there's been some subtle changes with him being with Garcia. They're not major changes, and there's a lot of polishing that needs to be done with him. But, you know, I'd like to see the rematch. I just don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I could be wrong, but I just don't see that happening at all. I think that Floyd's just not going to want to do it, and he's going to find a good reason not to do it, a good reason in terms of his own reasoning, I'm not doing the rematch and bypassing it. I don't know what you guys think.
Well,
he
did say afterward, if people wanted it, that they could do it again. So he did go out on the line that much. Now I don't know if he'll change. Now Maidana would certainly deserve more money for a rematch than he got paid the first time around. So you could always say that it was a negotiating situation if it did not happen. But I'm not exactly sure what he would do. Other than that, for a next fight, because Khan won't fight him in September, so you're probably looking at something next year if those two are going to get together.
That is true. Speaking about Khan, his performance over Collazo, what was your take about that? What do you think? Do you think that too much to buy into? Collazo, I think, you know, a lot of folks were kind of hyping him up because of his stoppage over Ortiz. What do we go with Khan from that fight? Where do we go from there?
Well, I was impressed with Amir, and I thought that it was a very mature performance by Amir Khan. He had control of the ring. He didn't do anything stupid. He didn't really change his game plan. He was able to set the style and the tempo. Collazo, even with his advancing age, and maybe he's not as good as he was, but he still is a clever guy. And although Collazo, I felt that Louis tried like three or four different times to change up the way that he was fighting, and nothing really was working. So I thought it was a very good fight by Amir. I always feel, that he's very skilled, one of the very best. If he didn't have, the problems with his chin in the past, because you always feel it's nerve-wracking,
right,
watching
right.
his fights, because you feel like he's one punch away from disaster every time he fights, and you're kind of waiting for it to come. I think he's really an outstanding you know, boxer with all, you know, he's got speed and skill, certainly. Pretty good punch, not overwhelming, but pretty good. And, you know, the only thing is, you know, has been his ability to take a punch. So that's always, you know, that's always going to be in question because of the couple of disasters that he had in the past. And, but you know, I liked how he fought. I thought he fought a very mature fight. And Collazo on top of everything, you know, he still can make it rough pretty much for everybody. But Khan was in control, and in control of that ring, his confidence was at an all-time high, it looked like.
You know, Collazo to me just looks so puzzled. And he was, yeah, like more memorized of that speed from Khan. I don't think he realized how fast Khan was going to be with those hands.
Right.
He just looked so confused. Like, he didn't know how to counter it. He didn't know how to set his own pace. He decided to try to be a big puncher, try to only throw one punch at a time. He just looked really, really off. And at the same time, he looked like he just got old completely overnight in front of Khan.
That might be right, and he did get completely desperate. He was at the point where one round he just kept walking in with his hands down, I mean, just at his side, looking for that big punch to try to
right,
turn it around. I mean, he did try a couple of different strategies, but nothing really was working. Maybe the victory over Ortiz was overplayed a little bit, because Victor's got his own chin problems and issues. But nonetheless, you know, Louis tried hard. He was hanging in there. He was definitely trying, but he was just totally outclassed, in that fight.
Yeah, he was. Well, Rich, thanks again for coming on Leave the Ring. Really appreciate it, brother. When can we catch you again commentating out there? Anytime soon?
I just got offered a fight, but I just can't do it. I still have my radio shows in the morning, which Monday through Friday that I do on KFI in Los Angeles, and so I still owe them, you know, my prime loyalty. So I got offered a fight, but it was actually in the midweek here in a few weeks that I was unable to do it. But I pop up now and then on Fox Sports 1 doing some of the Golden Boy fights, and so who knows? I don't know myself, but sometimes. But if I can work it out, I like to do every chance I get. I like to do a fight on television and definitely stay in that loop.
All right, then. Well, either way, we'll catch up with you either when you're doing a gig, or we'll catch up with you on Twitter.
Okay, thanks very much. I appreciate that. And my Twitter handle is @BoxingRich. And otherwise, I'll see you guys at ringside, or talk to you from TV. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on today, guys.
Hey, our pleasure. Have a great weekend. Take care.
All right, you too.
Here we go. Hall of Famer Rich Marotta with us here on Leaving the Ring, giving his take of Floyd Mayweather-Madonna fight. Here on Leaving the Ring, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're going to keep it going here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to be calling in our next guest, which I have to set up right now and do myself. We had a fast pace today here, Gabriel.
You know? Just start talking. It's a lot of fights to break down this weekend. It is all about the heavies this weekend. And cool that they're really bringing in this new venue, the Galen Center at USC. You know, I don't know if this is going to lead to more, you know, events there, but I think that's the hope. But Steve had written about it a little while back. But, you know, it's always nice when you see new venues getting used. You know, seeing the Marquez Alvarado, you know, back at the Forum. We need more boxing. We need them in you know, bigger venues, better venues, new venues, whatever venues we can get. The idea, you know, several years ago, we were just feeling that we were down in the dumps, the sport. It seems like it's really grown, you know, exponentially. And however you feel about Golden Boy and the league or whatever that people think that they're creating, or I think they're creating, there's just been more boxing, a proliferation of it on different networks all over the place. And this is all good stuff. But I think still, you know, on the bottom of all this, and I'm kind of wrapping around to what the NSAC is doing with their new enhanced testing, they're looking to kind of consolidate things so they can get their prices down. And Mr. Aguilar, one of the chairmen over there, said that, you know, this is our only option, is to do this. And that's not true. You know, there is a group that's out there that they could do it with. But to the point is that when you look at, like, Andre Ward and his contract situation, Robert Guerrero going through the same thing, Mikey Garcia, this complaint from Main Events. Well, there's a lot of boxing events going on, and that's great. We got new venues, and all that's great. the big thing here, though, is that we really need a foundation. We need structure. We're going to keep fighting the same battles over and over and over again, you know, whether it's doing the right kind of testing, not something that the promoters, you know, agree with and are cool, you know, because it ain't about them. It's about actually having a clean sport or getting these fighters their rights. And, you know, what are these practices with trying to get a guy to sign an extension years before his contract even goes up, but offering him another fight and then saying, all right, sign with me again? Is that a good practice? Is it a bad practice? I think we need more of a universal rules. We need to start looking at the OLLI Act, give it some teeth. We're just, like I said, we're going to be fighting the same battles over and over again, and it's going to be a free-for-all, as it has been since the very beginning.
Keep going. Okay,
okay,
I'm going to patch you in right now, okay?
All right, Dave is on the bat phone. My rant is over. Dave, you back?
Okay, I'm going to be... Yeah, I'm back right now. Let me patch in our next guest with us. Is Rich Quiñones, who's from Go Fight Live. He's a commentator. And Rich, you there with us, brother?
I am. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good, man. Hey, thanks for stopping by and talking some boxing here on Leaving the Ring Radio. You're in Delaware,
you know,
right?
I'm actually getting ready to do some Friday night fights in Dover Down tonight. We got a real good card and real honored and privileged to hang out with you guys and Leaving in the Ring. You do a great job.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate that.
Welcome.
So the big thing right now, the big topic, as you know, is the moment, Madonna versus Mayweather. Let me ask you, how did you score the fight?
I scored the fight 116, 112. I mean, I went back and watched it several times. I could have even went 115, 113, really 7-5 in favor of Mayweather. I didn't think it was as controversial as a lot of people thought. I mean, a lot of people were screaming it was a highway robbery, maybe a little bit of a parking lot mugging, so to speak. But look, Marcos, he came to play. He was a tough opponent. I thought that it was probably Mayweather's toughest fight since his win over Castillo in their first meeting back in 2002. And the keys I had in that fight kind of laid out in the fight. It's just a matter of, in my opinion, guys, two halves of that fight. Right, the first half was Marcos doing what he needed to do, being aggressive, going to the body. I thought if he can finish off rounds and tie up Mayweather a little bit, I thought if he can finish the rounds real hard, he would do pretty well. Because let's be honest, Mayweather's a guy that wins a lot of bouts on points, and then what'll happen is he'll break his opponent's will. Second half of the fight, great champions, you guys know this, right? I don't need to tell you. They make adjustments. And that's exactly what Floyd did. He made adjustments, and great fighters do that. After that sixth round, I thought it was a totally different fight. But ultimately, I had it 116-112. If I wanted to be generous, I could have went 115-113.
Let me ask you this, Rich. Did he really make adjustments, or was this the case of Madonna's fast pace catching up to him with those later rounds after the 6 and 7, going into those deep rounds, he kind of gassed out?
Now, you know what, I think that's a fair point and a fair question, and it's a good one. I think if you look at the fight as a whole, I mean, let's be honest, Madonna was so active and so aggressive. If you look at the numbers alone, 221 out of 858, which was about 26%, and then for Floyd, who registered 54%, so he was much more accurate, 230 out of 426. I thought that for Marcos, guys, really – coming in, it was that right hand that was coming straight over the top, those uppercuts down under. They gave Mayweather some difficulties. And he went into that fight really no respect for Mayweather. We knew he was – look, he's a volume puncher, right? He was relentless against Broner. So I don't know if he gasped, because I still saw that style and that commitment later on in the fight. But I just think it's a matter of look at the accurate punches. I mean, Floyd can get away with just moving and jabbing and moving and jabbing and piling up points and getting those close rounds. And I ultimately thought that was really the difference. I mean, look, I know after the fight, Floyd said he wanted to stand and trade and make it interesting and entertaining for the fans. I got to be honest, I think that's just a crock. I think he didn't give credit to a 12-1 underdog. And the kid came to fight, and that's why I believe that there should be a rematch, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But ultimately, I don't think that Maidana gassed. I just think that Floyd was able to move around a little more. And I know he tied him up and people were screaming about that. But you know what? You do whatever you need to do to win. I mean, look at that fourth round, right? There was a headbutt. Marcos, I'm not saying he was a little Bernard Hopkins-esque in there. He was trying to take Floyd out of his comfort zone. And that second half of the fight, Floyd started to take Marcos out of his comfort zone and would not allow him to get up against the ropes and work the body. And that's why it was such a close fight, guys.
Yeah, that's very well said. You know, I think you know, it's funny that people complain about the fouls of Maidana. It's like, how many Floyd fights have you seen where he puts, you know, he puts an elbow, you know, up to your throat or the forearm to the throat. You kind of have to deal with some elbows as you're coming in. He's a master of those dirty tricks as well. I mean, that's just boxing 101. So people that complain about that kind of stuff, I always just refer them to Hagler Hearns. I'm like, you guys would just explode with the amount of low blows and like headbutts and bad things that are really going on in a rough and tumble kind of fight. It's that kind of fight. That's just the way it is. I mean, you know, the guy that lines up, the moment I saw Canelo look at Floyd and get into a boxing posture, say, this fight's over. He's not a better boxer than Floyd. So why are you fighting that game? You got to go in there and be aggressive. I love that Maidana did that.
And listen, what does Mayweather do, right? He rattles you, he frustrates you, and then boom, you blink and 3-4 rounds in the books, he puts you away. So, I thought there was a little bit of a blueprint laid out to disrupt Mayweather. But the bottom line is, if you don't get those first 3 or 4 rounds against Mayweather, you are in serious trouble. I mean, say goodnight. That's pretty much it. And, you know, quite frankly, if there was a guy out there that we thought can beat Mayweather, we would have seen it already. And that's just, you know, and I'm sure you guys get calls and you talk about who he's going to fight and whatnot. I'm tired of the pack nonsense, because you can go back a couple years ago. Pac turns down $40 million in 2012. Floyd, $100 million, and it's split with the PPV. Until I see that contract signed, sealed, delivered, and there is a date set and there's a weigh-in and both of those two gentlemen step in the ring, I will believe it. I don't care anymore to discuss Floyd against Manny, because quite frankly, if Floyd fights again in September, which he says he was going to do, I certainly think he's going to give this kid a rematch.
I hope he does give him a rematch. You know, let me tell you this. The blueprint that I see right now of beating Floyd is being a sprinter that can be a long-distance runner. That's what, to me, that's what Maidana has to do the second time around, because he was a sprinter in that fight, and it was working for him. You know, it was really disrupting with Floyd's rhythm. And I've always said, if you disrupt his rhythm, if you make him think a little faster than he needs to think, then you have a legitimate chance. But you have to have an A and B strategy, because Floyd will figure you out and he'll start picking you apart. With me, what I was watching was a guy that was backing up Floyd, keeping him at the ropes, landing a lot of shots. Some of them were missing. I mean, you know, let's be fair. 50 out of 50-50, they were missing and some were hitting, right?
That's fair. That's
imagine,
fair.
You imagine if you would have kicked that pace. Right?
Listen,
you imagine if you would have kept
100%.
That pace. Right. You know?
And it's hard. And it's hard because you're throwing awkward punches. You're trying to cut off the ring. These punches are coming in from various angles with certain force. And then they were just punches from odd angles that were, again, objectively, they were not as clean as a lot of people want to believe. And I think people just always want to bash Mayweather because he's Mayweather and he is the greatest. You can argue pound for pound fighter we've ever seen. And look, the record speaks for itself. You can't dismiss and argue and crush a guy for not fighting certain fighters if there's none out there. You just can't, boom, make one up. So that's why I think this would be a very good rematch. And let's be quite honest. Look, Floyd underestimated what Maidana and Robert Garcia put together. I mean, it was a good
fight.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
It's just at the end, that's why Mayweather is on that Mount Rushmore, and there are a couple guys who are still trying to chisel out their faces up there. I mean, he's alone right now, and that's why he's the best.
You know, I'm going to tell you this, that Maidana not only brought the game plan of being a sprinter, but he also brought the court to open the bottle. And what I mean by that, he has found that overhand right, that really awkward overhand right works against the shoulder roll. It worked with Broner, and it worked with Mayweather, you know. And I want to see that rematch. I just got this major feeling it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. That boy's going to be – he's going to talk his way out of it. He's going to outprice it. I think Madonna is rightfully should ask for a lot more, because I think it's going to triple the mass of people that want to come out and see this, because in reality – casual fans that decided to sit down and watch this fight, they had no clue who this kid was or didn't even watch it, but heard from their coworkers and friends and relatives, go on there, watch him, don't know who he is. Now they know that there's a guy that actually made a Mayweather fight entertaining. I think that he brings now major volume to the rematch, and he should have a leverage when it comes to the negotiation table. I don't know what you think, Rich, but that's my thought.
No, that's an excellent point, and I think some of the fans get turned off because they'll look at the scoring, and that's just, I mean, we've seen it over the years in boxing. You know, a couple interesting numbers I want to share with you guys, if I can, real quick. I mean, we know this is the third fight of that blockbuster deal with Showtime, right, that Floyd signed in 2013. Right now, it's the richest contract in sports, right? So he's earned $115 million in two fights, 32 guaranteed over last week, and then you get the upside of the pay-per-view. So he was saying he's going to clear $70 million. He's not going to clear $70 million unless pay-per-views really go off the charts. But a Pacquiao fight, because of the aesthetic appeal, it's sexy, it gets people talking, that can be a blockbuster. But a fight against a guy that took Mayweather where he really hasn't been in his career, to me, that's sexier. And I think now, because people are looking at the scoring and they're saying, hey, this really could have went either way. I mean, there are some people that I've spoken to over the last week or so that said, look, we thought Floyd clearly lost that fight. But again, scoring, we know it's very objective. I mean, Danny Garcia and Herrera. I mean, I scored that fight for Herrera. I didn't have it for Garcia, and he's right in my backyard in PA. So, you know, I look at, ultimately, it's all about the numbers and how much they can drum up, market, the mass appeal. And the bottom line is the greatest thing that money does is he knows how to make money and he knows how to sell a fight. It's the bottom line. This guy can sell. He can walk down the street and see an old lady with white and sell her a ketchup popsicle. That's how good this guy is. I mean, he is a salesman. I don't know if he wants to get back in the ring with this kid, to be honest with you guys. I really don't know. I mean, I don't think he's scared and he fears him, but he knows now. Remember that great line in Rocky when they were looking for Apollo Creed to find a couple fighters, and they went through that the yellow pages, so to speak, and his trainer, he mentioned Stallone, he mentioned the Italian stallion, the trainer goes, Tony turns around and goes, I don't want you messing with no southpaw. To me, they knew something, right? The trainer knew something. I think now Floyd's camp is maybe saying, we don't need this kind of guy in our life. Do I want to see a rematch? Absolutely. Do I think he deserves a rematch? Absolutely. Are we going to see it? That's the question.
You know, I was talking to a few fans and listeners who leave in the ring through via email, and you know, one thing that I mentioned before the fight even happened, I said, listen, if you look through history, fighters that set goals for themselves never ever reach it. It's a really bad habit that fighters do. They end up putting a lot more weight on their back, more than they need, and because now they need to be a little bit more careful in how they strategize their career to get to that certain goal they want to reach.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say that, and I used to say this about Manny Pacquiao a lot, the cherry picking, eventually, it's going to pop. That cherry's going to pop.
Yeah.
And I think we're very close to seeing the cherry pop. We almost saw it happen on Saturday night when Marcos Madonnacino got in there. And I'd have to tend to agree with my partner, Gabriel Montoya, when he says that I think we're starting to see a little age catch-up with the legs of Floyd Mayweather. And I know a lot of Floyd fans, are they going to be pissed off at me? They're going to start sending the hate mail at us once again. But I think he's almost ripe and ready to lose.
No, you're dead on accurate. And if people, they want to debate that with you, that's fine. Then I would think that some of them really aren't watching the sport as closely as you guys are, because eventually, look, if you're heavyweight, you don't really lose that power. I mean, my goodness, look at a guy like Foreman for years, right? As you get older, the power's always there. But I believe as you get older, you do lose some hand speed, and you also your legs start to betray you a little bit, and now you're talking 10-rounders, 12-rounders. That's a different ballgame. Now everyone's hungry. They want to be the guy that gives Floyd his first L. And look, when you look at what Marcos did against Broner, he demolished him, man. He absolutely demolished him. Now, everyone's talking about Amir Khan. I personally have never been a big Amir Khan fan. I respect any man that gets in the ring. It's just his style. I think he's a little more Hollywood. He's a good-looking guy. He's business savvy. He's a smart guy. He's still young. I just don't know if he was fully committed. Now, maybe I overrated Collazo for what he did against Ortiz, and I was shocked that Collazo fought such a bad fight. So my point is Khan a guy that they're going to bring up and maybe talk to Floyd with? Because the bottom line is Floyd is teasing a lot of guys right now, right? He's teasing a lot of guys right now because Khan had to take that fight to be on the undercard. It gave him great exposure. He had a brilliant performance. So is it Khan? Is it going to be Marcos again? Is it going to be Mayweather? It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next 6 months and how the Mayweather camp approaches it, because I agree with you. You know, this is a guy that all of a sudden I'm not going to say he's leaking a little bit of oil, but I kind of equate it to that 2007 Patriots team. They put up all these points, and then, boom, they start to leak a little bit in the playoffs, and then, boom, the Giants pulled that upset. So if he's rhymed for the picking, there are guys out there salivating, and rightfully so.
Yeah, let me throw something out there really quick, you know, because, here on Leaving the Ring, we're not into conspiracy. We're definitely into facts. We had Brian Toohey with us about 2 weeks ago here, and he brought up excellent points of how games are fixed. He wrote a book called The Fix Is In, and he also wrote a book called The Larceny Games. Okay, and Gabriel, I got to hear your take on this. What if, and there's some fans have written me asking me, hey, Dave, you know, listen to Brian Toohey. Do you think in any possible way, because knowing that there is no other opponent out there for him for September, that he made this look a little bit closer so that we salivate for a rematch? Could this have been a setup to make us think that this was a lot better of a fight when in reality he was setting this up to get a rematch in September? Gable, really quick with Gable, and then I'll let you in on it, Rich. Gable, what do you think?
Anything's possible. I just don't think it's in Floyd's DNA to sacrifice his body in that manner. You know, he always said he didn't want to be in a Castillo-Corrales type of fight. I don't know. Maybe that's why he's getting so mad at Maidana and talking to the ref so much, was that he was trying to control the situation. Like, look, this is what it is, but don't get too crazy here to hit me behind the head.
I thought he
was
looking for Miss Jackson and Nelly, to tell you the truth.
Wow. But, I mean, anything's possible. It's boxing.
Too soon?
Absolutely.
Right.
Never too soon, Dave.
Never too soon. Rich, what do you think, brother?
Man, if you're trying to sell me that, then I'll tell you what. I got a bridge I can sell you to. Any takers? No, I don't. Listen, I don't care what level it is. I mean, I've done close to about 130 fights in the calendar year, and for Go Fight Live and for Comcast and for television, and any guy that steps in the ring, they come to play. I don't buy into the showmanship like it was back in the day. I just think that Floyd was really just talking out of both sides of his mouth, to be honest, and just didn't want to give credit where credit was due, that a guy exposed him a little bit, gave him a run for his money, scared him a little bit. And look, the one thing about boxing, you guys and your listeners, your great fan base, they all know this. It's one punch, right? That's it, and lights out. So I don't buy into that for one moment. I don't think the fix is in. Now, we can go back to the 20s and 30s and talk a little bit about that sometime, but not now. Now, you're not going to do that. You're not going to showboating and then putting yourself in position to kiss the canvas, totally two different things, and I agree with Gabe. I that's not in Floyd's makeup, man, because you push him, he'll push back.
I don't think that it's not in his DNA to take punches in order to entertain us. He's always talked about that. That's what his whole style is about. That's really his whole being. I mean, people think about styles. It's not like you choose, like, hey, I'm going to be a puncher boxer or a boxer puncher or just a pure boxer. A style is an extension of someone's nature. That's where it comes from. And if you've dealt with Floyd, I've dealt with Floyd quite a bit. He's a very defensive person. He's also a complete control freak. He appears to be quite vain as well. We saw when he got cut, he was flipping out about his face. All those things don't lead me to believe that he would sit in there and take blows to make it more entertaining to set up a rematch. Do I believe fights can be fixed in this modern era? Of course. It was a great, great article that just came out about why I fix fights on Deadspin. It's been making the rounds. It absolutely happens at this level, at all levels of combat sports. But in this fight, I don't know. I tend to think that it was just what we saw, that a cigar is a cigar, and Floyd's legs are getting old.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've seen guys that they're only getting paid maybe $500 to $1,500 for a person. They get fined because they're not putting on performance. But I agree 100%. I mean, he is so regimented. And you know, I've built a good relationship with Bernard Hopkins over the years. And he reminds me it's that work ethic, regiment, healthy lifestyle, the training, the discipline. I agree 100% with you. You know, a fighter has that certain build, that certain DNA. Sometimes you can be ahead and you're watching a fight and the guy is well ahead on the scorecard and you're like, why is this guy going forward? He should be moving around like he's winning the fight. Sometimes it's just instinctive. It's in your DNA. If you're born to go, you know, you want a European fighter and you want to be compact and go forward, you're going to do that probably for your entire career. And it's just not in his makeup. But look, I thought it was a great fight. I can't stand to hear the people say boxing is dead. It's another crock. The past year or so, the sport has been very good. There's been controversial outcomes and decisions, yes, but we've also seen some very, very good fights, I think, the heavyweight division moving up to in the U.S. So I was very pleased with the card. I know some people criticize the card again, but it is what it is. And I was hoping for competitive, entertaining, and really fair and balanced scoring when it was all said and done. And I thought for the most part it was a real entertaining fight.
Well, there you go. Rich, hey, thanks again, brother, for coming on Leaving the Ring. I really appreciate it, man. And we'll catch up with you on Twitter.
Guys, anytime, man, for your fight fans out there, follow me definitely on Twitter, Rich Q on Q, and then GFL.TV, a lot of combat, a lot of boxing. And it's a pleasure and an honor, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right,
man.
All right,
have
guys,
a great weekend.
Thank you. Take care.
You too.
Adrian Broner, Carlos Molina, man, I almost had it. I almost called it. I thought that, you know, Molina was going to be a little bit tougher than what folks were, you know, saying it was going to be. I got to tell you this, you know, I don't know what happened to Molina. And you know, when he had Adner Morris, the strength and conditioning coach, with us on the show, what did he say? You know, he gets stage fright. And you kind of see that. All of a sudden, he just shut down after the third round. For some reason, he just wasn't the same guy anymore. But I got to tell you what. Broner's ready to go. 140, 147. He's definitely in quicksand. I don't see this guy going anywhere if he's not properly maneuvered and matched. You know, he just doesn't have any pop. He seems really slow. And really, Molina just let the fight go. And if you want to talk about a fixed fight, I gotta tell you, Gabriel, give me a reason. Why did Molina stop punching? It was working. His overhand right was landing. His left hook, every time Broner took a step back, it was landing. But now all of a sudden, it just stopped. I couldn't get that. I just didn't understand what happened to the kid, you know? I don't know. Only he's going to be – only he knows the truth, right?
Well, I'm not going to call it a fixed fight, you know. I don't know. But it was certainly strange. And it's just – Broner is there for the taking, I think. Like you said, he is definitely there for the taking. The guy is very ordinary, in my opinion. He's got a lot of confidence, but if you can break that, as Maidana showed, and rattle him, shake him around, you can do some things. But if you're going to stand there and trade with him and try to outbox him and try to outthink him moment to moment like that, he'll pick you apart. He can he's quick off the draw. He's a little bit stronger guy. I thought he was bigger and stronger than Molina. He's not really natural to the weight. But, yeah, I just thought he left everything kind of on the table a little bit, Molina did. I never really understand that, but I mean, that's, again, it's his nature's, and only, you know, a fighter knows who he really is inside, and when you get in those moments, you know, my Don is a guy that he just is willing to throw caution to the wind. Not a lot of fighters are like that, you know. Otherwise, the sport would be huge if they all fought that way. But you know, I don't know. I felt bad for Molina. I thought he could have done more. I thought he had an opportunity in front of him, and he just didn't quite take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I got to go back with Luis Garcia, you know, strength and conditioning coach of Abner Morris, who was on point. He said that, Molina's a nice kid, but get him on that big stage, he chokes. He doesn't know what to do. And it was very evident that night against Broner, because what was working for him, it was definitely showing, but then he just went shell-shocked. He just couldn't do it again. You know, that just really surprised me there. Hey, let's pass in some fight fans before we get our next guest, which is going to be Ray Beltran, is going to be coming through on Viva Ring. Let's get some callers here really quick, see if they want to talk boxing with us here on Leaving the Ring. Area code 509, you're on live right now. What's on your mind? 509, you out there? Okay, let's go on down to the next one. Area code 212, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
What's going on, fellas? It's Richie from NYC.
What's up, Richie?
What's
How
up,
you doing,
man? How you doing?
What's going on? Listen, I couldn't watch the fight this weekend. I had to take care of some stuff for my mom. What was the whole glove issue that was going on?
Okay, they had a set that matched my daughter's outfit that were the Everlast MX gloves. They're kind of almost a version, I guess, of the Coleto Reyes puncher's gloves.
Mm-hmm.
When they went to be inspected, the Mayweather side didn't like the glove. They felt that the padding in it could be manipulated and moved, and they felt that it already had been, apparently. And so they were out. And the Maidana side was not happy about it. They went to a different glove, I guess it was, because the commission backed up Floyd's side. So then they went further along, and Kevin Ioli wrote a nice piece about it. Steve Kim, Max Boxing, wrote a nice piece about it. And they really just break the whole thing down. And essentially, they got to the point where he had to switch gloves. I think he was paid some money, switched to a different glove, the Everlast Powerlock, I believe, is what he went with eventually, which is still a good glove, but it was not the glove he chose. More detailed account. It's not going to relive it here. Check out Kevin Ioli's piece on him. He did a really nice job. He was there kind of as it was breaking and got everybody involved.
Okay, awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, thanks.
No problem.
All right.
Let's go with, I believe we got Rob Riller with us here online right now. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Yo,
happy
it's
Friday.
About to go down.
It is. It absolutely is.
All right. It's about, I was, you know, there's so much to talk about in boxing, and I was like, I'm not going to talk about the Mayweather fight. I'm sure they got that handled. I'm about to talk about, Jadeveon Clowney versus Chris Areola, and it didn't go down like that. Okay, didn't go down like that. Needless to say, I got Areola in seven. I think Jadeveon Clowney is a little bit overexcited, a little bit overhyped. But the Mayweather fight, I feel like there's a lot of people right now that are getting too used to this crap. And really, when I hear, it would make sense to me if they just gave scores that I could kind of like, not that all scores have to agree with my opinion, that's not true. I could be biased at one point. I could see things the wrong way at one point. I could be scoring the wrong way at one point. But
right.
When I hear people say that they scored the 12th round for Maidana, I thought Maidana got his ass beat in the 12th round. When they say they scored the 12th round for Maidana, but didn't score the second round for Maidana, and didn't score the seventh, I kind of just lose focus. I'm just like, what is going on right now? And when you look at the fight, we know for a fact that Mayweather has never been good against fighters that can cut the ring off. And I said on the last, before the fight on the show, I think maybe Maidana can be polished up in some way where he can do something that Cotto did, do something that I didn't know he was going to go Street Fighter, but he went in there and did work. Now, were Mayweather's legs gone? Was he old in the first Castillo fight? No. Was he old for the first half of the De La Hoya fight? No. Was he old against Ricky Hatton for the first half? No. Was he old against Cotto? No. When you cut off the ring on Floyd, he doesn't have an answer for it. He just doesn't. He doesn't have a jab that can keep you off. He has elbows that can keep you off. He has a referee that can keep you off. But he doesn't have a jab that can keep you off. And if you look at the punch stats, because that's all I keep hearing people say, give me the punch stats from rounds 1 through 8 of the Maidana fight. It would be the most lopsided punch stats for Maidana that you would probably see in a Floyd Mayweather fight. Most of Floyd Mayweather's punch stats came from a jab that was landing later in the fight and landing at a very high accurate percentage because Maidana wasn't moving his head. So the punch stats, I don't care about that. All right, that's like Bernard Hopkins fans. Where were the Bernard Hopkins fans when Bernard Hopkins landed way less than Calzaghe, but, you know, apparently he beat Calzaghe somehow because of punch stats? You know, but and they were like, oh, well, the punch stats came later in the fight when Bernard Hopkins tired. I see the same thing with the Maidana fight. But the way the fight was scored was ridiculous. I cannot see how people give Maidana the 12th round. They'll give him the second. And I had Floyd Mayweather losing round 1 through 5. I gave all those rounds to Maidana off of ring generalship, aggression, work output, and Mayweather just being uncomfortable. He looked like an amateur in there. He looked, you know, crying about his cut.
Everything.
Yeah, I've never, you know, and he's over there throwing, and, you know, and then, of course, later in the fight, he starts throwing elbows and stuff. You know, and you see Maidana bending his arm like we had discussed multiple times on the show. You know, bend his arm, twist his arm, do something that's going to discourage him from doing that. And it did discourage Floyd. And to say that Floyd is a master boxer where he could outbox Maidana, it's not that he could, it's that he should have. Maidana's an average brawler at best. He's a B-class fighter. And I'm sorry to say, I like Maidana, but he's a B-class fighter. Just like Castillo was a B-class fighter. And these guys constantly give Mayweather problems. And they, you know, and Castillo, we all know Castillo beat him. And then to say, for people to come on here and say, well, we don't know, there's no fighter that can beat Floyd. And to, you know, oh, I'm taking shots at the last guy that was on. I'm doing it right now.
I could have stopped him and gotten into a big argument about it. I'm curious about hearing other people's points instead of getting into, maybe because it's spring or that I'm married and in love, and so I'm a kinder, gentler me now. But,
In Mayweather's defense, I really, truly believe the reason why he was looking on the outside of the ring is he was looking for Miss Jackson.
Oh, my God, Dave.
He threw it off.
The Nelly disc tape was bad enough. The Nelly disc tape was bad enough.
That he's arguably the greatest ever. He's not in that conversation. He's just not.
It's not so much about that. It's just the fact that we've seen Floyd Mayweather. Well, I've seen Floyd Mayweather at least take 2 losses in his career. He should have lost his adjudicated fight for disqualification. I don't know when your corner can come in the ring and start a brawl with a fighter. I didn't know that was allowed. And just like he said in the first fight press conference, the referee just let it go. You know what I'm saying? So I don't really see how people can say, well, there's nobody that can beat Floyd. Floyd doesn't fight. First of all, Floyd's biggest tactic in boxing is to hope and pray that the fighter gasses. That's his like one shooting star hope that the fighter gasses out. Floyd Mayweather has to be the biggest product of modern pop culture media exemplified in boxing today. Like, he's there because there's no other. If Roy Jones was around today, Floyd Mayweather wouldn't get the decisions he gets. Because you would have a fighter that you can just kind of point the American crowd to. Like, you could, oh, well, Floyd Mayweather lost. Well, here's Roy Jones, or, you know, like, here's Mike Tyson. We don't have that today. All we have is Floyd Mayweather in America. So we don't have anybody like, well, if he lost, we're going to have to give it to this guy. We don't have that. So we're going to have to give him these decisions, you know? And that's how I see it is. But I see people are obligated to say otherwise because they have jobs to keep. You know, they have positions to keep. And they work here in the States. You know, they can't go to Germany and start working. You know, so unless you're on Boxeo Tecate or Top Rank commentary.
Well, it was interesting watching the pay-per-view and how it, you know, I don't look to pay-per-views or even the fights on the weekends for my news. You know, that's not what they're for any more than, you know, a football analyst during, you know, the Rams game is going to have some breaking news about something that you know, doesn't pertain to the game. You never hear anybody talk about, like, well, this guy, you know, is coming off a drug suspension. It's just not what it's for. It's a different platform. But it was interesting to watch, and nobody talked about the gloves. That wasn't a major issue. You know, it should have been. All through the fight, you're like, wow, I wonder what this fight would have been like if Maidana had the gloves that he wanted to have.
Nobody really talked about that. And the really just disgusting stuff that he did, putting that out, that information about Miss Jackson on Facebook, his ex-fiance, it's not like his ex-girlfriend. He was going to marry this person. And then he outed her, apparently, we don't even know if it's totally true, about this alleged abortion on Facebook.
Yeah.
And that turned into Floyd Mayweather might be distracted. How disgusting
right.
was that?
I got to interrupt you guys.
We're not supposed to be news,
right.
but that was brutal.
It was. I got to interrupt you guys. Rob, I got to put you on hold because I got to patch in our next guest real quick, and then we'll get you back on, okay, brother, before we end.
All right, no problem.
Let's get Mr. Ray Batran here on Leaving the Ring. Has been on the show numerous times with us here. Ray, are you there, brother?
How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Good. Just relaxing, you know.
So I heard you moved down.
Dave Montoya, long time no talk. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me here with you guys, you know.
Oh, you're welcome.
No problem. No problem. So you're down in Arizona now, or where you at?
Yeah, I just moved to Arizona, man. I mean, it's been a pain in the ass and on the butt, man. Just moving, you know, and finally I'm here, you know. I make a move with my family.
That's good. What was the why the move? I mean, why did you leave LA to go down over there? What was the whole purpose?
Because I'm tired of LA, man. It's too much traffic, too much people, and too much stress, man. So you know what? Also, it's expensive, you know. And also, I think Arizona is a better place for my kids to grow up, you know. So I just gotta go back to train over there, you know.
Yeah. No, I feel you. I mean, I left the city. In San Jose, to a smaller town, just for the same reason. I used to go to the grocery store. It used to take me like 3 hours sometimes, literally, not bullshitting you, 3 hours just to get out of there, you know, to get there,
for real,
what I need. Yeah, it's crazy, you know. But
it's not worth it, man. I mean, life is too short, man. It's not worth it to live like that, you know. Honestly, I mean, fuck that.
Exactly, you know, I used to spend $3,700 a mortgage, you know, for a really small house. It's just crazy. But you know, that's not where we have you on here, brother. We obviously have you on here for a couple of questions, okay? So hopefully you can clear this up. So it's been reported that your manager, who you've had for quite some time, had a great relationship with Steve Fader. Has it ended? I mean, where is it standing right now? Are you guys still doing work, or is there some truth to it that you guys have departed?
Well, listen, I want to talk about it. You know, Steve haven't really been my manager. He's been my agent. I mean, my advisor. You know what I mean? We never have a contract. You know what I mean? It's just a word. You know, whatever. You know, a loyalty. You know what I mean? And I heard I read on some place. You know, that about that I put him apart. Whatever. You know, but you know what? I don't have a contact with him, you know. I just had to make some changes, you know, for my business, for my career. And I feel Steve's still, like, getting paid, you know, even without a contract, you know. I just got my word, you know what, I got to make some changes, but he's still getting paid, you know what I mean? I don't know if I'm going to need him to do something or not, but I'm a loyal person, so I don't think anybody does anything like that, you know what I mean? People go to contracts and you break up, whatever, you know. But I decided to do it like this. You know what I mean? I couldn't get the fight with Crawford. You know what I mean? So I got to make some changes. I take control of my career. You know, and I get my lawyer, it's David Garcia, but he's not making the decisions for me. I'm the one making the decisions. You know what I mean? So talking about the fight with Diaz, I read that they blame Garcia. David Garcia, but the fight is not going on. It's like
him
making the decision.
Okay, so hold on, Ray. Let's just clear this up really quick so our listeners can kind of understand. You know, let me outline this for you, okay? So the conscious rumors is that David Garcia, who is your lawyer, has now, what people are believing is now has replaced Steve Fader as the role as advisor. And you're saying that's not true. He's just your lawyer, right?
He's just my lawyer, yeah. He's just checking all my contracts, you know, checking all my paperwork that I need, you know. Because, I mean, I don't know how, and, you know, Steve is not a lawyer, so I need to get somebody that they can't do the job. You know what I mean?
Okay. So, and then so just to clear this up, so I can get a better understanding. Okay. So you're not dealing with Steve anymore. You're now taking your career on your in your hands. You never signed a contract with him. So let me ask you, why give him a percentage then if he's not going to be dealing with any of your fights, if he's not doing any negotiations? You know, do you feel like you're obligated because he's done so much for you? I mean, what is the relationship?
Well, you know,
I'm
grateful with him, you know. I'm grateful with him. He's going to still work with me on some other stuff, you know. When the time comes to get a fight, he's going to help me with something, you know what I mean? But the reason I give him a percentage is because, like I said, I'm a grateful guy. I'm a grateful, you know, and I'm a loyal guy, and that's why I give him the percentage, you know what I mean? I got people that help me in my whole career. They invest a lot on me, and they don't ask nothing back for me, you know what I mean? But because them, I am where I am, you know, and I try to not pay back, but, you know, be grateful and give them some money back or whatever they give, whatever they do for me, you know what I mean? They don't even ask for it, you know? They don't even complain about it, you know? But I still
right.
do it, you know, because thanks to that people, you know, thanks to the president, all the support, I am where I am right now. And they really, all the people, they really took a big, big chances, you know what I mean, to support me, you know what I mean? And they don't even ask
right.
for nothing back, you know? They don't even complain about it, you know what I mean? But now, hopefully things get better little by little. Now I can give back, you know, a little bit, you know what I mean?
So the huge... So
that I'm grateful, you know what I mean?
Right. So the huge disappointment is you didn't get the Terrence Crawford fight. We all heard that the announcement is Crawford's going to get Yorkie's Gamboa. And that kind of left, what, a bad taste for you where you felt, you know what, I didn't get that fight, so I need to move on with my career on my own. And is that what happened?
Part of it, you know what I mean? Part of it, and it's a big part of it, you know what I mean? Like, if you know, online right now I'm worried about I'm up to, you know, get all my paperwork checked on, you know, like I'm doing the signing the right stuff, you know, and just protect myself for the future, you know what I mean? And that's it.
So you're giving them a percentage
I fight,
despite having a contract, but you know, Steve is no longer helping you out. I mean, that is generous. That is really generous.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the way I am, you know.
Right.
That's the way I am, and
Let's move on. So some fight fans feel that Garcia intervened in getting in stepping into the Diaz fight and stopped you from doing that. Tell us what happened. Why are you not getting the baby bull fight? Why isn't that fight happening?
Well, you listen. First of all, I mean, I am where I am because I fight anybody. I never pick my opponents. I never choose an easy fight. You know what I mean? And that's what I'm about to. You know, I fight anybody. You know what I mean? The reason why I'm not fighting Diaz is because when I fought the last time in Vegas, I was already have a plan to move to Arizona. So I have a lot of stuff to do, you know what I mean? I haven't been in the gym, I barely training, you know what I mean? So if they would have told me, you know what, we got plans for you to June 28th, I wouldn't even move. I would have stayed in L.A. and stayed in the gym, you know what I mean? But normally what I'm do every time I fight, a week later, I'm in the gym. I'm back at the gym, you know what I mean? I never off the gym, so I never been even this long off the gym, off training, you know what I mean? So I don't feel comfortable. So the thing is, it's not about Diaz. I fight anybody. If I'm 100% in shape, I got the right time, I fight anybody. I'm not scared to fight anybody. We can do the fight Diaz late in July if they have to, you know? It's not even about that yet. I'm not even doubt about beating him. I know I beat him.
You know what I mean?
But I have to be ready.
Yeah, I agree with that. I remember the last time we had you on, and, you know, I remember you were so frustrated, and you had told us that, you know, the reason why I struggled or I lost previous fights is because I didn't have, you know, time to train. You know, I had a fight. And now you're in the position where you can say, no, wait, hold on, wait a minute. You know, let me get the time in. You know, I agree with you. I think that
exactly,
your wife
man. You know, I'm risking too much. I'm risking too much. I work so hard to be where I am right now. Diaz need me more than I need him. I mean, not to respect him, but I'm in a better position right now. So if I fight him, I just ask for a couple more weeks to be ready, you know. It's not about that I don't want to fight him. I'll fight anybody, bro. I'll fight anybody. I'm not worried about it. I never worry about my opponents, you know what I mean? I worry about myself. I got no time to worry about my opponents. I only got time to worry about myself and be ready, and that's it. Whoever they put in front of me, I'll fight him, you know what I mean? But right now, I'm in a different situation, you know, and I'm risking too much, and I'm not going to give anybody a chance you know what I mean, to be in the ring and be in disadvantage, be in shape
right.
and all that, you know what I mean? So I know my body, and I know that time is not enough for me to be ready, so I don't take it, you know what I mean?
So where do you go from here?
You know, because if, let's say I fight him, if things go wrong, what am I going to say?
Right.
And you
right.
get all the credit, you know, I mean, I can't make no excuses.
Yeah, and you're left back to where you started, you know, at, trying to rebuild
yeah.
back to where you got to. So let me ask you this. So if Steve is not doing the negotiations for you, you're clearly the guy that now doing your own negotiations. Have you went back to Top Rank or to the Diaz camp and say, hey, listen, this is the time that I need. Can I get it? Can we set up another date? Or have you done that and they have they just kind of haven't said anything back to you? What's going
well,
on with that?
Well, they said always now or maybe next time it won't be available. Well, you know what? It's nothing I can do about it. You know what I mean? What I have to do is I'm going to talk to Top Rank. I'm going to give a call today. Also, I'm going to be in L.A. for the Alvarado and Marquez fight, and I'm going to see him over there. I'm going to talk to them, you know what I mean? And I'm just stay positive, man. I'm going to go back to train in L.A. and stay in shape, and whatever comes first, any opportunity comes first. I don't care who it is or where it is or how much I'm making. I just want to fight, you know what I mean?
But
I'm
as
not,
long as
I'm
you got
the
time in the gym, right?
Exactly. You know what I mean? That's why I'm going back to Sunday. I'm going to leave my family here. You know, I do a lot of sacrifices too, man, like every fighter does. You know what I mean? And I'm willing to
right.
to pay the price. You know what I mean? So it's not about I don't want to fight. It's not about I'm making a hard time. It's just that I don't have the right time, man. That's the only thing, you know? I'm not even complaining about the money they're paying me or I'm not even complaining about they didn't give me the shot with Crawford. It's not even about that. It's just it's not the right time for me. If it's not the right time, I don't fight nobody. Simple as that. Because if I lose, I lose. But if I win, everybody wins.
Right. Hey, I agree with you. And you know what? I commend you for taking this stand, Ray. I think that's the – you know your career and you know your body better than anybody else, you know. And nobody should have the right to tell you when you should move and when you should fight, you know. So, you know,
yeah.
keep it up, brother. Keep it up, you know.
So,
Ray Bartron here
you,
on
man.
Leaving
thank
the Ring
you.
Radio. Thank you.
Thanks a lot,
for calling
man.
In,
thank
man.
You. God bless. Thank you.
You take care, brother.
Thank you. Goodbye. You too.
Ray Bartron here on Leaving the Ring Radio, clearing it up about why he decided not to opt against get in the ring with the baby bull Diaz and what's going on with his management and cleared up if David Garcia was his new advisor and turns out to be it's not his advisor. He's just a lawyer. He's his lawyer, does all his paperwork too. And With Stephen Fader, he no longer is using him as an advisor, but he's given him, because they had no contract, but he's given him a percentage regardless. But Stephen is no longer doing any type of negotiations for him. So that should be clear enough. And in fact, it's what he wanted to come on Leaving the Ring and get off his chest and kind of let the people know this is where it's at. This is where it stands.
And
there you go.
Talking on mute. No, it's you know, we were talking about this a bit, you know, and the idea that fighters kind of taking control of their careers, and he's in a good position. The one thing I do worry about with him is that, you know, a guy like him, he fought his way into a position where he's a legit guy, but he still, you know, is not like a draw in any one particular part. He's not, you know, a traditional A side. He can fight and he can compete with those guys. But the danger here is letting that window pass of where you're hot. You know, you don't stay hot forever in this sport. It'll keep moving on. You know, it just always moves on past you. When you hit these moments of litigation or I'm just getting my house in order and now Ray's a blue collar guy. I mean that in that he's a hard worker. He knows how to build the foundation and to build on top of that. He's a true gym rat. He's always there. He's always working out. He's always in shape. And he kind of got caught off guard and was like, look, I'm not going to sell myself short anymore, and I respect that. But there is a danger there of waiting too long and letting opportunities go by. You only get so many in this business.
You know, you know what? I'm going to tell you what I like about what he said and what he's doing. He's literally, you know, you get guys. I mean, let's be honest. You know, Beltran is one of those fighters that – he's a blue-collar fighter. He has workmanship, you know, and he understands that he doesn't have all the gifts from the gods of boxing that have been, you know, shined on him. He really has to literally work for what he gets, and he has to work for those wins. He puts in that time. And for him to say, listen, he's putting himself in jeopardy because no promoter or no manager or nobody in the business want to be told or told to wait, hold on. I know what's best for me, and this is what I'm going to do. Because a promoter and manager or anybody else in business, they believe they know what's best for you. They know the time and the date. Why? Because they invested in you. They want to make the move because they have to keep the pocket laced up. Here's the guy that's saying, I want to keep everybody's pocket laced up. I want to continue to be putting people, you know, funding people, putting money in people's bank accounts. So I need to take a step back, and I need to wait. I need to be properly conditioned, properly mentally there, and settled. The guy just moved to Phoenix, Arizona. You know what I mean? So just like yourself, when you moved from L.A. to San Francisco, it took you a minute to adapt, for one, and to settle. It doesn't happen in a week. You know, it takes some time.
I had to buy a whole new set of skinny jeans. I mean, because, you know, my legs are not. These pills here. It's been rough. But
I had, you know, when I moved to San Jose.
It's easier to find the lime green ones up here, I tell you.
I'm telling you. When I moved to San Jose, from San Jose over here to Modesto, it took me about a month to find all the right spots to go have a beer. You know, all the right places to have a happy hour. It took me about a month, okay? So, you know. But I'm figuring as a fighter, Ray Beltran, you know, come on. You know, he's got to settle in his family, take the kids to new schools, make sure the wife is happy. There's a line of things, of a list of things you got to check before your mind is going to be where it's got to be to further out your career. And he's thinking like a businessman, to tell you the truth, not like a fighter, because a fighter would be like, okay, well, I don't care if I'm not, you know, ready. Let me fight him. This is the baby bull. You know, this guy's supposed to be out of the sport, not in the sport. A fighter not thinking would think something like that. That this should be an easy fight. This should be a keep me busy fight. But he's not looking it out like that. He's looking at it like, look, if I lose, I'm done. That's it. Where do I go from there? It's the same thoughts as with Chris Nyman Oriella. He's in that position right now. If I lose, that's it. No more talk of a Mexican-American heavyweight.
Well,
got to wait another
Chris,
10 years, you know?
Yeah, well, this is another millennium. They're rare. They don't get that big that often, you know? Usually when they get that big, they're round, you know? With Chris, though, I mean, I think the real danger for him, he's like saying, that's it, it's over. Well, there's four belts. It's never over, you know. You can always get that vacant title if you try to stay competitive. But I think for Chris, I think maybe when he says that, there's a couple things that I can't maintain my focus much longer than this. You know, this is as good a shape as I'm going to be in, which I don't agree with. I think, you know, at 33 years old, there is so much more in the tank, particularly what we know about how to get in shape these days. There's so much more that you can pull out of yourself all the way up to, I'm 41, you know, but of course I'm not taking punches in the face, but still, I don't believe that you're too past it. But I think with Chris, you know, his fear, he's got such a strong personality and such pride and a real strong sense of self. He's an intelligent guy, you know, and people would say, what are you talking about, listening to the way he talks, you know, that he swears. But he's very cognizant. He's very self-aware. And for him, a guy like that, to become a stepping stone would be a very sad thing to watch. And I think that is what he means when he says, it's over if I don't win this. That he's going to be that guy that other heavyweights get matched with to beat. And just for a prideful man like himself, that would be a tragedy. I cannot wait for this fight.
Wait for it either. I think it's going to be Chris the Nightmare. I think he makes the adjustments. I think that his new conditioning and his new focus and motivation in this fight is really going to shine. I'm hoping that it's going to shine. My biggest worry is that he gets the title bout, and that struggle of trying to stay focused and not be self-destructive is going to be a major, major struggle with him throughout his career. How long does he keep the bout? I'm not really sure. So we may be able, if he wins it, it's going to be a short-lived, in my opinion, celebration.
Yeah. Can you imagine the party? Oh, man. Yeah, that if Chris wins the title, that's a very, very good point. Buster Douglas,
yeah.
You would think he would have never lost again after beating Tyson. Wrong. He just, he lost the battle with himself first. Next bout.
That is the struggle with Chris, and the struggle with Henry Ramirez and the rest of the team is that that's what they're going to have to really, really, really focus on. Hey, we're down to the last seconds here on radio, man. I really appreciate everybody that comes through. Don't forget to download the app to your iPhone or Android and rate us. Tell us what you think about it, and be sure to tune in every Monday for the next round with Gabriel Montoya here at the Dark Cloud and Mr. Steve Kim, the K9 for Max Boxing. And don't forget, Tuesdays, all boxing in Espanol. Boxeo Tijuana Radio is on Tuesdays on the mobile app, and always on Thursdays, even though we did a Friday, because I was really kind of burnt out. I didn't want to do anything Thursday, man. I apologize. It was me.
You get that spring fever, Dave. It's all right.
Yeah, I'm telling you, allergies are killing me, and, beer just keeps calling me. So anyways, everybody, have a great, great weekend. I want to thank everybody that wished me a happy birthday, man. You guys made it extra special. It would have been even extra special if I would have got some presents, but yeah, I did it. Can't ask for everything, right? But anyways, have a good weekend. Let's see what happens this Saturday between Chris and I, Mariela, and Berman Stavern. I think we're geared up to have a really good epic night of heavyweight fire on ESPN. Remember, don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Even though that Felipe Nyon came on here and tried to say my tag, you're not me. You don't have my voice. You don't have my personality, Felipe, okay? Cabron. All right, man, you guys have a good one.
All right, Dave, as always, peace.